Let's be real. There's only one math formula you really need to know. Marketing leaders plus in-depth discussions about their insights and challenges equals the ultimate podcast for your marketing career, CMO Combo. People can't buy from you if they don't know who you are. It seems obvious, yet it seems that CMOs are constantly having to fight their corner when it comes to investing in brand awareness. It's time to break things down and really show the ROI and profitability of putting money into brand awareness. And we're doing just that with Rachel Donnelly, CMO of Experian Marketing Services. You've probably seen the news about how short the average tenure is for CMOs. Make sure you don't just survive, but thrive with the Alliance's C-Suite Masterclass. Whether you're looking to climb the ladder or currently an experienced marketing leader, you'll find everything you need to navigate the modern C-Suite. Across 4 months, you'll learn from experienced executives from leading brands like Trustpilot, Slack, Samsung, and more on how to drive results, inspire teams, and secure your place at the table. Don't be another statistic about the tenure of CMOs. Instead, join the ranks of the world's greatest business leaders. Check the link in the show notes for more information. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to CMO Convo. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing today, Will?
I'm good. Nothing better than doing some podcasting on a Friday with a big weekend ahead. So thank you very much for joining me to set me up nicely for a bit of freedom over the next couple of days. So thank you, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you as well, because it's an important conversation that we're going to be having as well. Brand awareness, that's always a big topic in the CMO Alliance community, particularly right now with a lot of pressures that a lot of organizations are under. So I'm really looking forward to having this conversation with you, Rachel. But before we do dig into all that good stuff, maybe you could introduce yourself to our audience, tell us a bit about your background and why this topic was so important for you to be talking about today.
Sure. So my name is Rachel Donnelly. I am the Chief Marketing Officer for Experian Marketing Services. That is the marketing arm, data and analytics department within Experian. A lot of people know Experian as a credit bureau. A lot of people don't actually know that there's other parts of the business that are B2B focused. And one of those is the marketing department that I'm working in. So our goal is to help brands, marketers, agencies, technology companies reach their customers in a more effective and efficient way through use of marketing data and identity capabilities. And that's really kind of the core of what we've been doing. And I joined Experian about a year and a half ago. Before that, I was with a company called Publicis. It's an advertising holding company. And I was with a number of startups beforehand and always kind of focused on marketing, product marketing, sales enablement. And this is the first CMO role that I have. So it's been a really exciting, fun year and a half building the function, building the team, and really thinking about how we want to be seen in the market going forward.
Fantastic. I mean, it's quite a year to be stepping into your first CMO role. It must have been quite a roller coaster so far.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So when I started a year and a half ago, the company had acquired another company called Taped. So the goal of that acquisition was to help accelerate our transition into digital and addressable channels and data. And marketing was the first function that kind of came together. So really figuring out what did we want to be kind of as we grew up, right? As one big company together with this acquisition, what did that mean? What were the brands we were taking forward? And how did that translate to our customers? So a lot of the last year has been building the function. So really establishing the marketing best practices, but also doing a lot of research and understanding how we could kind of use this year to set us up for success. And as like a jumping board for the next 5+ years in terms of strategy. So it's been quite a process of research, understanding, and then building kind of that foundational groundwork.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing what you build from here on out, Rachel, but back to the matter at hand. And one of the angles that we wanted to talk about today was the profitability of brand awareness. But before we do get to that, because it's obviously a very important topic, let's start maybe sort of like a foundational level. Let's define, what do we mean by brand awareness? It's a term that we hear a lot in marketing circles, and it's often seen as one of these sort of almost like vanity metrics only marketers care about. But what do you define brand awareness as mainly through the lens of the conversation we're going to be having today?
Sure. So I think when I think about brand awareness, it is, do people actually know your brand and what you stand for and what you can deliver for them? So as I said, kind of at the top of the call, a lot of people know Experian as a credit bureau. Not a lot of people, unless you're working with us directly already or you've worked with us in the past, know about our marketing arm and our marketing and data capabilities. And it's also the history of Experian, is well known in the credit and services and consumer side of the business. So building the B2B brand is really important for us, but building on all of the legacy that Experian already has as a brand was also very important. So when I think of it, it's, do our customers know who we are? Do our prospects know who we are? Do they know how we stack up against the competition? And are our employees also able to evangelize and advocate for us out in the marketplace? So are we all kind of speaking the same from the same playbook and whatnot? But yes, it is hard to measure. There are things that you can measure from a brand awareness perspective around share of voice, around coverage. So even some coverage either at events or in earned media, also around, say, like analyst coverage. So there's a lot of different things that we can look at that help us tell the story of an increase in brand awareness, especially because we were starting kind of from scratch. So I think I'm in a really unique position where there wasn't a ton of brand awareness. I've been able to start to build that. And while we still have a ton of work ahead of us, we are able to really already see year over year how we're performing. And I think that's something, always looking at the data to show that you're generating that return and the goals and the awareness that you were expected to generate.
And it's great that you're talking about this from a B2B perspective, because it's historically, it's often been something that's neglected in sort of the B2B side of marketing. People that, like, obviously people know straight away, brand awareness is super important for B2C, but it seems like it's only fairly recently in, like, historical terms that B2B is catching up. What do you think the reason is for that?
I think people think of businesses as a business and a corporation, but they forget that the people that are buying your product at a business are people at the core. So while we are marketing to brands, your customer is a person. So I think that's something that you really have to keep in mind, is that just the same as B2C, while that consumer might be buying your product or a little bit quicker to be able to go onto the website, sign up or purchase from an ad, we at the same time are trying to reach people. The people that we're trying to reach are normal people. They have lives, they have personalities, they have interests. And how can we ensure that our brand messaging is reaching them at the right time, in the right mindset, for whatever decision they're making on behalf of their business at that time? But at the same time, we want to connect with them just as people. So ensuring that it is, you're building a relationship, you're not just kind of building this transactional business to business sale.
Just to add to that as well, Rachel, I would say as well, also just the general busyness of the marketplace has necessitated B2B branding becoming more important. Like, if you go back 20, 30 years, like, who were the big tech companies that you worked? You only worked with the big tech companies. You had the IBMs, you had your, maybe your Amazons at the time, you had your Microsofts. Now there are thousands and thousands of SaaS companies out there, all servicing all these different things, all these very, very specific SaaS companies as well. And there's a lot of competition there. And if someone doesn't like your brand, they don't have any kind of emotional connection to prevent them going to one of your competitors. And like previously, where it was just, you're stuck with the one provider because it's the only provider you have access to.
Yep. I think that's also really important. So as I said, when I started a year and a half ago, we had just acquired the Tapad business. Mm-hmm. And so Tapad was a startup within the ad tech space. They've been around for 10 years, but there are some customers on the B2B side that have been working with Experian Marketing Services for decades, for 20 years. These are relationships. These are longstanding relationships. It's not kind of a vendor, buyer, profile or relationship experience. It's very much driven on the relationship that we have with those, our contacts at those brands or those other customers. They trust that we have their best interest at heart. When we're working on something, a new product, a new feature, a new capability, we're going to them, we're getting their feedback, we're brainstorming a bit. And that's how you build a true partnership. And again, it becomes less transactional, and it's about the people, and people trust our brand then as a B2B brand in the same way that a consumer trusts a brand because they've always been an Apple user or whatever it is.
And then that trust is incredibly important in B2B, because if you choose the wrong brand to work with in a B2B business, it's not just your own potential like wallet that gets hit. It's not like buying a faulty product at a store. You can have a massive impact on the bottom line of the company. You could threaten potentially dozens or even hundreds of people's jobs by making the wrong kind of purchase. So that trust level, that branded kind of relationship that you build up, that's incredibly important just to get people even thinking about considering your services.
Yep, exactly. And I think the sales cycle is so long too, especially in B2B. You might have 6 months, that's probably on the shorter end. It might be a year, it might be 2 years. And so really building that trust and that relationship helps your customers at the end of the day be able to go back to their bosses, go back to their teams and know that they're making the right investment. And I think that's something that's also really unique about B2B is if you have that partnership, it's less about like, hey, what can you do for me? What can I sell to you? And more about how can I make your job be easier? How can I make you look great for your boss? How can we make this all around a really successful investment? Because if you win at the end of the day because of something that you've been using that's ours, whether it's data or technology, we kind of all win, right?
Definitely. It is more of like a partnership in B2B, particularly in the SaaS model, particularly in like the agency partnership model, of course. So we're talking about the importance of brand, and I feel like we're kind of preaching to the converted here, like the vast majority of our audience are marketers. The big question is, why, when economic downturns happen, when marketing budgets get reduced, why is it always the brand building activities that seem to go first? Why are they not prioritized over more performance driven stuff?
I think that the easy answer, which I don't know, I don't think it's the right answer, but the easy answer is it's harder to measure. Mm-hmm. It's also the brand marketing is setting a foundation for years, right? It takes a long time to build a brand. It takes a long time to build that trust and that awareness and whatnot. It is very easy to look at a demand gen program and see, I spent this amount of money and 3 months later, I saw this number of leads. And so I think that's, it's kind of an easy place to point and cut dollars, but not necessarily always the right decision. It's really going to have to be a mix. And I think that's a decision that you make as a business. Where are we going to cut? Is it the brand work? Is it the lead gen work? Is it a combination of the two? And how can we also then find other ways to increase our pipeline that are not maybe as dependent as some of those bigger dollar activities?
And yet there's so many marketers out there, so many people in the CMO Alliance community in particular, who are tearing their hair out over the fact they can't do this obviously valuable brand awareness building activities. Like they know it, they just can't show it to the board. I think that's maybe the big problem. It's the disconnect between being able to show the value in real terms to people who don't necessarily, I don't want to say don't understand, maybe don't necessarily care as much about the things that marketers care about. So I think it is maybe a communication issue.
Yeah. So I can say from the work that we've been doing since I started, a big part of the last year, and it wasn't a big part of the money, it was a big part of time, to be honest, was understanding our current brand awareness, doing research to understand customers' awareness, prospects' awareness, not just of our brand, but our capabilities, understanding the affinities that they had. So how did they feel about certain products or capabilities or the brand in general? And we were doing that for both the Experian brand, Experian Marketing Services brand, but also Tapad, so that we understood how to bring them together. What were the qualities of the two brands that we wanted to take forward? What did that mean from a joint brand going forward? And then how could we really simplify that story? And I think that that work is so instrumental. And sometimes when I would give updates to the business, I would feel it was a little bit fluffy. Mm-hmm. And I would admit that. I would say, I know this seems fluffy. We're talking about our brand personality, or we're talking about the PowerPoint templates we use. But trust me, I promise you, if we do this right, it should just fade into the background and almost seem so easy and just common sense. If we do it right, it will not be distracting. It will sound fluffy for a couple of minutes when I give you this update, but you'll see the results right away. And I think that people appreciate the update, the why are we doing this? Why is it important? What does it mean for us, for our business, for our sellers at the end of the day? And we're kind of starting to see that result, the buy-in, people feeling they came along for the ride. And then now we're starting to see the increase in the share of voice that we have in the reference to our brand and whatnot.
So when you were doing the sort of audit of your current position of brand awareness, were those the metrics you were looking at that you had talked about earlier in the show? Do you want to reiterate them just for the audience?
Sure. Yeah. So the first thing we looked at generally was share of voice. When I started, I will laugh and bring this up quite regularly. My president was like, we just need to get loud. We have to get loud in the market. Our competitors are so loud. They sneeze and then they put out a press release. We are just very conservative when it comes to outward marketing, press coverage, things like that. And so we had to just be really smart about how we covered it. So we looked at share of voice. We looked at mentions in the press. We looked at requests for comment on news articles. We looked at analyst coverage, and we were really just trying to build a baseline of information across all of those kind of brand assets. We then looked at brand equity. So we looked at how people perceived our brand capabilities over others. That was all through quantitative and qualitative research. And that kind of gave us, after about 6 months of research and understanding and level setting, kind of a baseline of where we thought we stood as the marketing services business within Experian. And that gave us a really clear plan of where do we want to be? Are we okay with where we are here? Where do we want to increase, adjust the levers? So where do we want to kind of put our foot down to the pedal a little bit more? Where do we think we're okay? And it's okay that maybe we're not performing in a certain capacity. And that helped us build the strategy. So coming 6 months out, we said, this is what we want to achieve. These are what we want those numbers to look like in a year. How do we make that happen? And so now it's been about a year and a half, we're starting to see the year over year numbers. And it takes a while, but you can really quickly start to feel the impact. You can, when you get a call from a reporter for a comment on a piece, an article that they're doing, when they never called you before, or you start to see the share of voice year over year around the quality and quantity of the coverage that we're getting as a brand, that all starts to tell the story. But as long as the business was bought in, like everybody was when we first started on this project, they get excited by getting those little updates as well. And it may not seem day to day like you're making a ton of progress, but when you take a step back and you look at it year over year and you look at how it's influenced your strategy and if your strategy is being successful, you can really see the performance and the results.
So those metrics like brand equity and share of voice, were those metrics you were sharing outside the marketing department, or were they just kept internally within your own team?
No, we shared them. I think it's really important to be completely transparent with the business. So we were giving updates on a very regular basis around what we were seeing and why that influenced the decisions we were making from a brand and a marketing strategy perspective. So the dollars that we were investing, the coverage we were doing, the events we were participating in, it all kind of came back down to those metrics. And we use those metrics still today. We give updates to all team meetings about the performance that we're seeing, whether it's brand performance or lead gen performance and whatnot. And I think it's really, really important to be transparent, because marketing can seem so fluffy and disconnected from the rest of the business. But when I look back at it, my goal is always to be influencing revenue and to always be driving growth for my teams, for my sales team, my product team, whatever it is. And so that's kind of the lens that I take. Is this something that will help us generate more revenue at the end of the day?
Let's talk about showing how these activities can drive revenue. Because when you share like lead gen updates, like it's quite clear to people who aren't marketers that we've generated this many leads, that should equate to this amount of revenue if everything goes well. Yep. It's a bit harder when it comes to brand activities, a bit harder when it comes to share of voice. Do you have some kind of process in place for showing the correlation between those numbers going up and revenue growing up? Or is it more sort of, you're fortunate to have a board and people who are quite bought into these metrics already? Because I can imagine there are a lot of CMOs out there where they've got CEOs, CFOs, they don't care about share of voice. They just care about, is this going to drive revenue at the end of the day?
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit of both. In some of those softer metrics, like, hey, we went out with a new brand positioning, there are things like reference. Are people, not just our customers, but is the market referencing the new brand architecture? Is it landing? Because if it's the market can recall your brand, your product capabilities, that is a win in and of itself, because that's the general awareness. And then some of these others, like say an event. Events are a big part of our branding strategy. We want to be able to go out. We want to be meeting with customers. That helps build a pipeline for us. We do two big tentpole events a year. One's in January, one's in June. Those are opportunities for us to build a pipeline for our sales teams of contacts that they can then follow up on. So while the event itself is around branding and awareness, it is directly correlated to the sales team having conversations that we can track that in 6 to 12 to 18 months, we are able to see this initial contact that we had with the customer when they signed up for a thought leadership panel we had at this event. They had a meeting with so-and-so. Over the course of the year, then they've also seen these touch points around an email campaign, or they downloaded a white paper, and we start to track all of that. And then at the end of the day, say all of these touch points generated this revenue that came out of that initial conversation from an event that we had. So while some of those are a little bit fluffier, we do try to tie them back to the journey, kind of the funnel, in just a very traditional marketing way of it, of like high touch points, getting a little bit lower down and being able to see the conversions. But that's something that we are still building. So when I first started following the acquisition, we had two CRM platforms. So every campaign we were running twice. We were trying to generate, show our leads, and we were running them out of two systems. So we've consolidated our CRM. We've consolidated all of our email marketing. We've now consolidated our social channels and things like that. And we're getting into a good rhythm of being able to put together projections, track the results. And we're seeing that now coming out a year later. Even doing work like cleaning up our CRM system and making sure that all the accounts are in there properly and all of the contacts at those accounts are all appropriately labeled and structured, so we can start to see the results. And we do audits on a monthly basis to ensure that we're not like miscounting anything or we haven't missed anything. And so it all comes down to data at the end of the day. And some of those larger brand strategies, I partner very closely with our sales leadership on, and we say, we want to invest in this way. We are combining our strategy and our efforts as marketing and sales. And while we may not be able to attract leads from coming out of this event for 6 to 12 months, we know that it's important. And that's also extremely helpful, as having a partner in your sales organization that they'll advocate for your branding strategies, because it helps them at the end of the day.
Definitely, definitely. So it's a lot to unpack there. I'm going to start with talking about the multi-touch attribution, because I feel that's been one of the things that's been really missing from B2B marketing for a long time. Like, single touch attribution just sends you off in completely the wrong direction when it comes to these long sales cycles. And I think multi-touch attribution is going to be the real sort of secret ingredient to really show the power of brand to non-marketers. How are you going about building this process? You're still in the midst of building the process. Like, how are you going about doing it, particularly when it comes to sort of non-digital activities like events? Like, how are you getting that sort of digital footprint in order to make sure you can attribute things? Because you can't attribute a handshake at the end of the day. So yeah, how are you actually keeping track of all these different touch points?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have not figured it out by any means. I would say, if you ever think that you have anything totally figured out, you're probably not evolving and growing and learning. So we are, like I said, I think we're doing our audits on a monthly basis. So it is a very, it's a very fluid and evolving process for us. But things that we're doing now are ahead of these events, ensuring that we're reaching out to all of our email lists so that people know we're going to be at these events. We have social cards for our team. So anyone going to the events are on LinkedIn and they're sharing, hey, I'm going to this event. Are you interested in meeting? Maybe they don't actually have a meeting, but they have shown interest. So then we have a contact touch point that we can attribute to somebody interested in this event. Then we can continue to build that awareness for that funnel, for that, say, that contact of, did we actually meet with them? So maybe we didn't track a meeting in an online system, but we can go back and our sellers are keeping track of who they've actually connected with, or tracking those engagements in the CRM system. And then we can start to see that generate more activity over time. So we are seeing that contact again came to the website. So we use systems that help us with understanding our web traffic and the type of people that are coming from different brands. We can see their activity, how many pages they're going on the website. So that gets into the digital aspect, obviously, but being able to connect that offline to online is really important with the kind of the handshake of tracking an activity to a contact, but it's still not perfect, but we're getting better.
Well, I think the whole B2B industry is just getting better because more B2B businesses are doing more sort of more out of home advertising. They're doing more sort of stuff that's more traditionally B2C. Like, we've got B2B brands doing Super Bowl ads now. And how do you attribute stuff from a Super Bowl ad at the end of the day? So I think, yeah, we're getting better at it as an industry, but there still is work to be done. And I think that also there's new tech coming out as well that's going to be very helpful in tracking all these different touch points and just really, really mapping out the full B2B buyer journey is going to be a very, very interesting exercise, I think, for a lot of businesses.
Yeah. And I think that's really true. That's very much where we are, is we are still figuring out our buyer journey, right? We're trying to understand what that looks like. What are the sales cycles? What are the touch points? How do we track them? And it's all just about taking the data, whatever data is available, making sense of it so that you can tell a story that's cohesive, that when you present that to a non-marketer, they go, oh, that does make sense. They attended this event. They visited the website, but did not actually click or download anything, but they then joined a webinar that we had. Like, telling that customer journey story is so important, so that people understand the value of every aspect of your marketing programs.
And not to keep harping on about, but this is something that B2C does very well, particularly in sort of the e-commerce world, like being able to jump between different platforms seamlessly, being able to really, really see like all the different channels that your customers are arriving from. That's something they're doing very well in sort of their omni-channel marketing business. Exactly. And I think that's a model that we need to look more into for B2B for sure.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about the CRM audit. Is it just as simple as sort of making sure it's all up to date, or are you like checking on sentiment as part of that? Are you checking like how different accounts are responding to the brand currently?
We're not at that level right now. It's checking that everything is up to date. It's going back, and we do kind of point spot checks. So it's not necessarily always looking at every data point that came in throughout the month, but looking at maybe a couple of accounts that we know maybe we had a higher engagement with and that they're all tracked. I kind of consider it when you go in to the airport and they do like a random audit or something, like, hey, we're going to check your bag today. So we do kind of that random audit of like an account or a set of an accounts or a vertical. And every month we're changing that up a little bit to ensure that we're catching everything. But it is more, we're not checking sentiment at that point, where it's more, are we tracking the right engagements? Are we marking them correctly? Are we at the right, are the sellers, attributing them to the right stage of the funnel? How does that funnel stage align with the probability of closing the deal? So if they're lower in the funnel and the seller has it at a 10% probability, we want to check that that's actually correct, because if based on our research, we know that that lower probability is more representative of higher funnel activity. But also looking at where people are getting stuck. That's something we look at a lot. If we see that somebody's getting stuck at a certain level in the funnel, what do we need to do? How do we need to, do we need to have a BDR on the phone talking to them about what their challenge is? Do we need to make sure that the sellers are going out and doing a meeting with that account? Are we changing our strategy and getting them more tangible thought leadership? And are we putting them into a different marketing process then, and kind of a marketing strategy based on where they are? So it's a little bit of everything. It's not as, I think we will get more robust over time with things like sentiment and whatnot, but it's a good exercise for us to pressure check our strategy, pressure check where we are with sales, and make sure that we're all building them to go further down the pipeline.
Definitely, definitely. And I think as well that it still adds up to sort of like these brand building activities as well. Like the idea of having a very seamless buyer journey, that's part of brands. Like that's a brand perception to have. That's something you need to build on. So these activities that seem like just funnel building activities do still work towards building the brand as a whole, I think, as well.
Exactly.
I think that is a mistake that a lot of marketers can fall into, thinking there's two entirely separate things.
Yeah. And I think something that we've been testing out from our campaigns as well is we do, we're really trying to think of, if we are doing thought leadership, it's doing thought leadership that's both brand building awareness around a capability or a skill set that we have as a corporation, but then also how do you pair that with, if somebody doesn't need to go through the full funnel, they see that and they just want to be able to take an action, how do you give them that action at the same time? So if we're doing a piece of thought leadership around audiences that we think are going to perform well for retail and back to school, we talk about this, the analytics behind it, why these audience perform, what are the behaviors and the psychographics that are attributing what we expect to be good performance for these types of buyers. But then at the same time, if you're interested in activating against an audience because you are running a digital campaign and you want to reach this adult 25 to 54 with X, Y, and Z profile, here it is. Here's how you find it in a platform to be able to buy it today. So we are kind of trying to cover both bases a little bit. since we're still so early in kind of the branding and also lead gen work.
Yeah, sure. So lastly, the relationship with your head of sales, I definitely want to talk about, because obviously that's so important in any kind of industry, but particularly in B2B. But yet the head of sales, they often feel quite disconnected from brand building activities. So it's really quite refreshing to hear that yours is so involved in it. Can you talk a bit about how that working relationship goes? I imagine it's a bit like a two-way street in terms of like support you provide. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Sure. So the way that our sales organization is set up, my peer is a chief commercial officer. We've been working together since about May when he joined the business. He came in to bring the sales teams from the two businesses together as one. And we are very much lock and step on a daily basis around the strategies that we're executing, how to prioritize, because he has a large sales team and we can't treat every sales vertical or every engagement equally. We have to be able to prioritize what do we want to be the priority now? What do we want the priority to be later? How are we performing? Is there a vertical that we need to give some life to because maybe they're seeing their leads are starting to get stuck in maybe the MQL, they're not converting to an SQL perspective. So that's very much a partnership just on gut checking, giving an update. How are we performing? What are your priorities as a seller, a sales leader, and how does that translate then back into the support that we can provide? And we're doing everything from product marketing to the vertical marketing to the lead gen to the events to the branding. So there's a lot for them and for us to be able to optimize and adjust based on where we are. It's not necessarily all brand. It's not necessarily all lead gen. It might be product education. Like there's a whole plethora of things that we're doing for the team. And then I think underneath our CCO, we have sales leaders for different types of clients. So we have a brand sales leader that's a leader that's going to our brand clients, like a CPG or a retail or a healthcare company. And then we have an ad tech sales arm. So that's where we're going to platforms and technologies and agencies that are all kind of working on or behalf of with those marketers. So really trying to come at it from both ends. And that team is also just super important because they are on the ground day to day with those sellers. They're understanding the pain points. They're understanding how we're coming up against our competitors. So when I work with our CCO, it's more around strategy. Once we get into the next layer, it's about execution for those sales teams and those different clients and client verticals and the horizontals, and how can we really help them move the needle. And then the way that I describe it is, again, kind of like I said with clients, when our clients win, we win. When our sellers win, we win from as a marketing team. And it's really fun to start to put together some of the case studies around the progress of an account over a year or 6 months or whatever it is, and how we, all of our touch points and how we worked really closely together to get it to be a success. And that's, I think, is just fun. We can all share in the wins.
It's always great to be able to celebrate wins, particularly when it's a almost like a company-wide win, isn't it? It's something that everyone can get involved with. So when it comes to sort of the brand side of things, how much input, how much feedback do you get from the sales team on like how brands are perceived? Because I imagine being on the front line, talking to customers, being aware of the competition and who customers are choosing over you, et cetera, they probably have maybe more firsthand experience with how your brand's perceived than the marketing branch of the business does.
Yeah, so I think the brand work that we did over the last year and a half, they were along for every step of that ride. So they were helping us find the customers that we wanted to be interviewed as part of our qualitative research. They were identifying prospects that we couldn't crack for whatever reason. And we were getting them in as well as part of the qualitative research. We were giving them, I don't remember how frequently we did it, but they were getting updates on a very regular basis, kind of the sales leadership, as well as our product leadership, as well as our broader business leadership on the results that we were seeing and how that meant we were going to change our strategy. And then when it came time to, we did a big simplification of our product architecture. We had something like 150 products when I started. Wow. We were down to two. It doesn't mean we have less capabilities. It's just, we really simplified how we talk about it. Because a lot of the feedback was that people felt that we just had a laundry list of things. There wasn't a cohesive story. It was very features based and it was not strategy or solution oriented from a brand's perspective. Mm-hmm. And they were very instrumental in being in hitting the two products, getting their buy-in, because they're gonna have to go out and sell it and talk about it at the end of the day. And if they feel like we've taken something away from them, that will be detrimental overall. So getting everyone bought in, comfortable trade, et cetera, that was really important. And now the conversations are less around, like, I don't know what we do. Our clients don't know what we do. It's more around this specific feedback that we're getting from a customer, or, hey, this awesome white paper that so-and-so competitor did, be great if we could do something like this in the future. It's very collaborative around how do we kind of bring our best foot forward when we're showing up, how we're showing up and whatnot, if that makes sense.
It does totally. I imagine getting them brought in at such an early stage with this kind of process as well makes it easier to get buy-in for future activations, for future activities as well, because if they've been a part of building up this process to begin with, they want to see it continue as well, because they're invested. They maybe enjoyed the process and they want to see it continue as well. Yeah. So I imagine it contributes really nicely to just the general company culture behind just having people invest in the brand across the business, not just within the marketing department.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been, so when I started, we had a very small lean and mean team. We had a couple of contractors that were working on design and content. We've built the team now to have a product marketing function, a partner marketing function, a brand and experience function, as well as we're still a very small lean team, but a lead gen function. And I think people appreciate that there are all of these resources where there were none before, so that it allows them to focus on selling. If we're the ones that are able, if we're creating content, we're creating that awareness, we're helping to fill that pipeline for them, they can focus on having those conversations with clients, and they're not trying to come up with a witty way to reach out to a client about a new back to school audience that we've developed. So I think that they see the results, and it's a fun and exciting time because we're testing and learning. And I don't know if this is going to work exactly. This is my projection. Let's see how it goes. I need your feedback so that we can course correct, because the worst thing I can do is continue down a path that we don't think is going to be successful, whether that's me, whether that's someone on my team, or whether that's a seller or a product person. It's really important that we're all bought in, because at the end of the day, we're trying to generate revenue for the business.
Excellent. So Rachel, I feel we've covered quite a broad field here. Let's try and talk about some maybe like practical steps for our CMO audience. Let's say we've got CMOs maybe stepping into a situation similar to your own, where there wasn't much brand to work with, they've got to build that up. Maybe they're in a situation where the board isn't as receptive as yours has been to investing in brand awareness as a valuable part of the company. How would you advise them to really present this idea to them? Are there any like particular case studies they should be looking at? Are there any particular examples out there, or really just a mindset they should be presenting?
Yeah. So I think the one thing that's really unique about us is that we're building a brand within a larger brand. So Experian generally has a well-known brand. We have a very well-known B2C side of the business, and our board understands the marketing that's needed to drive that brand awareness. So maybe I had a leg up because I didn't have to explain branding it from scratch. But really explaining the B2B side was very important. And what we did was looked at, bringing in a third party to help us with that brand research was really important, because it wasn't just, it kind of took all the emotion out of it. It wasn't, hey, we're not performing, we're not loud, whatever it is. It was very data driven, and you let the data tell the story. And I think that's kind of how I've been approaching both the level set, the goal setting, the tracking of the performance against those initial goals that we had. It takes the emotion out of it. It's less, hey, trust me, we really need to do a better job, or trust me, it's working. It's data driven. They become really comfortable with the data. Then if you start with that conversation of where we're being deficient, you can point back to that same exact data. You don't have to re-explain it. And you can show the performance and the growth. It just makes it so much easier, always kind of being data driven in any way, shape, or form.
Definitely. So Rachel, maybe let's tie things off with your three golden rules for how people should be approaching brand awareness right now. Like, what are the big things people should be thinking about when it comes to brand awareness, particularly in light of cost of living crises, budgets shrinking? Like, how should we be thinking about brand awareness as marketers, and how should we be explaining that to our compatriots in other departments?
Yeah, I don't know if I'll have three. Let me think though. I think my big kind of takeaway in the piece of feedback I always come back to is your clients are people too. Build that connection. And that will be part of your brand awareness as well. It may not be a marketing activity. It's building that connection on a human level that helps keep your brand and your services or your seller top of mind. So if you can always think back to the people that are at the other end of that email or that cold call or that thought leadership campaign that you're running, always think about the people at the end of the day. I think that's so important. And then I think about, the data. Always go back to the data. What are the data points you want? Be really clear about what it is that your objectives are and be steadfast in being able to deliver against those objectives. And then probably the third thing is don't be afraid to fail. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't work out. Just be the worst thing is not adjusting and not changing based on your learnings. So I've seen in the past, not here, where you set out to do something and you just want to continue to do that because that's what you set out to do. And you're afraid to say that, hey, that didn't work. So that, again, that transparency, that data-driven approach will give you the tools to say, you know what, we tried it. It didn't work. Good thing we only spent a month on it. We're going to change it again. And we'll look back in 2 months and see how we performed. Don't be afraid of change. Don't be afraid of failing. And don't be afraid of adjusting and being agile in your strategy, I think is kind of the big thing.
Awesome. Three pillars, not just to build your approach to brand building on, I think to build your entire career on there, Rachel. So thank you very much for that advice there. It's great. Thank you very much for joining us today as well. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think we've covered some very interesting points about brand awareness, about just basically how to operate within a business in order to move the needle on this, which I think is very important for CMOs right now. So thank you very much for joining us, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me, Will. This was great.
Well, thank you once again, Rachel. And thank you to our audience as well. I'm sure you found this conversation as enjoyable as I have. We'll be back soon with some more CMO combos. Like what you heard from this CMO combo? Make sure you hit that subscribe button and leave a rating so the whole world knows how great it was.